Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, it is Wednesday night here on the Chase Thomas podcast, and I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am a little bit discombobulated, John Taylor of Fangraphs, because we're recording in the evening, which just contrasts weeks and months of our schedule. I feel out of whack. Do you feel out of whack recording right now?
Mildly, if only because usually baseball stuff has happened already, so we don't have to be talking about things that are technically still ongoing, but I don't know. I guess there's a certain, maybe this will be like night Twitter and just have a certain looseness to it.
I was just looking.
Maybe that's what we need.
Exactly. And I was looking to do at least 90 minutes on Touki Toussaint's Cy Young candidacy in the second half here.
I was going to say just 90 minutes of free jazz improvisation on Touki Toussaint.
He was so good. His command.
Can I admit to you, I don't even know what the start was. Because amidst this road trippery that I'm on, I haven't been able to pay as close attention to the baseballs as I would like. So what exactly did Touki Toussaint do that has you willing to dedicate an hour and a half of praise?
Well, for starters, this was his debut back in the majors this week. He almost made it 7 innings, 6 2/3. He put 2 on with 2 outs in the 6th, unfortunately. So they had to put in Tyler Matzek, who just all over the place. AJ Minter been banished to Gwinnett, but Touki was just dominant. Like, he was hitting 97 over and over again, and his curve was hitting 75, but he was going after dudes, and he was also just forcing a bunch of ground outs, which is just weird. Like, he was just in control, and he was like 50 pitches through 5 innings. Like, it was just the most efficient I've ever seen Touki Toussaint in my life. And I was like, oh, this is what he should be as a former first rounder. And I don't know. Like, it was one of those things also, too, is just the amount of just issues with this Braves pitching staff right now. And then, I mean, we don't talk about Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson and Kyle Muller and insert name here. But, like, it was a welcome sight. And I think if his, like, he owes the stuff that if he puts it all together, his upside is just still really high to me. But we haven't seen something like this in a long time.
Okay, that's all fair. I mean, this is the point where I just admit that Atlanta pitching is not a thing I've kept up with enough recently. I've just kind of assumed that an entirely static cast of, like, Bryce Wilson and guys who look like Bryce Wilson. But I'm just taking a look now at what the roster is at the moment. So beyond Charlie Morton, Drew Smyly, who seems to have fixed himself to a certain degree, that's nice, and Max Fried, what have they done to patch up the Ian Anderson hole?
Oh, they
have. That sounds awful, but okay.
they have not. Bryce Wilson and Kyle Muller started in a doubleheader today. So
I see, but this is Touki Toussaint's first start of the season, and he was very good. Interesting. Okay. So is there realistic hope now that Touki can be a thing? Or
I mean, I like John. I wrote about this last night, but like, because of just the state of this team right now, and that, like, I'm now having to live through Dansby Swanson in the two hole. Guess what? It's okay for Braves fans to get overzealous about Touki's rebirth, because if we're going to have to lose Acuna, lose Soroka, and then deal with Dansby Swanson whiffing in the two spot over and over again out of necessity, then you know what? I'm going to enjoy this. Did I mention that Dansby Swanson is in the two hole right now for Atlanta?
That's not ideal. I mean, look, I know we talked about this, but like, once Acuna goes down, like, I mean, you're kind of piloting a boat that's taking on water too fast at a certain point. Like, any move you make, it's to
there are
steal the horrible cliches.
No, I mean, you're
just
there.
I know, and I understand that.
There's no reason not to.
It's less that the NL East is right there, and more that no one is capable of taking it. It's not even like this is an obstacle. It's just sitting right in front of all of them.
Well, I'm writing tomorrow, or it might be late tonight. We'll see. I'm going to Denny's to do a bunch of writing in a couple hours.
Okay. That's what Faulkner did, actually, when he was writing Absalom.
Well, there's a 24-hour Denny's by my new place. So I'm just, you know,
aren't all Denny's 24 hours?
Well, what I'm saying is, like, they didn't used to, like, during the pandemic, a lot of these places.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's true. Yeah,
so
that's
it's
true.
Back. So it was not 24 hours.
It's back, folks. We're bringing back the 24-hour Denny's.
Or just 24-hour diners in general, because
people are talking. You're hearing people talking about the 24-hour Denny's.
John, the amount of time that I've spent writing or working at 2 o'clock in the morning in just shitty Atlanta diners in my life, it's astronomical, and I miss it so much. Like, I remember feeling a little bit, like, it's amazing if you do it at like I don't know if you've ever done this, but like if you're doing it on the weekend or like a Thursday night, and I guess early Friday morning when it's like 2, 3, whatever, and you're clearly the only sober person in the establishment, and they're just like all looking for French toast and wondering what's going on with my laptop and my like books and my notes, and I'm just like looking at stuff and just writing away, and I just am chugging coffee and club soda with some limes and lemons, and just going back and forth and just getting up to go to the bathroom over and over again. But it's a wild ride, but it's a welcome one for me.
Okay, that's all fair, but okay. So what were we talking about before we digressed into 24-hour
Denny's?
Well,
the reason I was gonna like I was saying about the reason I brought the Denny's is like what I was gonna write about, because Jim Bowden did his different like he basically did his report on what teams are doing based on his internal reads and who he's talked to and stuff like that. But what he said about the Braves is he said, "quote The Braves are buyers. The Braves need another corner outfielder." Such as Mitch Haniger or Joey Gallo, a starting pitcher such as John Gray or Kyle Gibson. John Gray, I would like a lot. Kyle Gibson, I don't think makes a lot of sense for where they're at this year.
Gibson, I just feel like Texas is like after his last two starts is probably just leaving like increasingly frantic voicemails on the other for other GMs. Just reminder, Kyle Gibson still a thing. Haven't heard in a bit. Just gonna, you know. Hey, just checking in there on Kyle Gibson. Just those kinds of messages over and over again.
Right, and if you're the Giants, you're like, we can fix Kyle Gibson. We can fix everybody this year.
I can fix him, yeah.
But also bullpen help, Taylor Rogers, Richard Rodriguez. I would love Rodriguez in this bullpen. But he also said, my favorite trade idea for them is with the Twins to land Jose Berrios, Rogers, and Byron Buxton. Atlanta has the farm system to do it, and it would be one-stop shopping. Dude. This I don't think I could handle it. Like I think I would just like
Atlanta's, but you know they're not going to do that,
John.
You know they're not
going to have this. It's 11.
They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. Like that's just what was the whole deal? Berrios, Buxton, and
Rogers,
and Tyler Rogers. Or which Rogers did they have? Trevor.
I think it's Taylor.
No, Taylor. Trevor is the Marlins one.
Wait, which
Taylor is the. What do you mean, which one's which?
Wait, so which one's the Twins one?
Taylor Rogers.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Taylor and Tyler Rogers are brothers. They're twins.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny because one of them's on the Twins. okay, so Berrios hits free agency after the 2022 season, yes?
Is he a 20? Yeah, because Marquez is 2025. Yeah, I was looking at different options. I think, is Berrios really that? I thought he had one more year of team control. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm just double checking it now because like I mean part of my thing the reason I'm double checking is because like
yeah,
I don't think Atlanta
2023.
Okay, so he has two more years under contract.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean that has to be the kind of thing. Wait, no, he's only under contract for next season and he's a free agent in 2023.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, never mind. He'll be a free agent after next season.
Correct.
Is the other way of putting
it. Guess who's still going to be trying to win a World Series next year? The Atlanta Braves.
But that's the thing. Like, I don't think Atlanta does any trade unless they can get minimum 2 years team control.
But I think you could lock him in. Like, part of the whole point.
Because the other thing is Berrios and Buxton are getting raises.
Albies, like, I guess part of it is, like, we don't know what Freeman's going to get. And shout out to my guy, Freddie Freeman, for another great game last night. But, yeah. Oh,
shout out to Freddie Freeman's kid.
Oh, do you like that?
Getting that Tatis signature. Big ups to Charlie Freeman.
Well, they kept showing him in the stands in the broadcast and like really hyping up the Tatis and like whether or not he was rooting for his dad or Tatis. And then they were like, well, he's probably rooting for Tatis to go 3-for-4. This is something Glavine said out loud of like, he's probably rooting for Tatis to go 3-for-4, but his dad to go 4-for-4 and the Braves win. I'm like, this kid's like 6 years old. He's not thinking about any of this. He just thinks Tatis is cool. He's not thinking about what are we talking about? Like the Braves broadcast booth, man, it sucks. But, you know, like some things I'll write
it's
down
as
I'm watching.
It's not great.
Like Chip Carey is a caricature of like what people think Major League Baseball broadcasters are. He drives me up the wall. And Tom Glavine's just so boring. Like he'll try and pivot to Glavine, and Glavine's just he's like, yeah, he's attacking. Back in my day, we were doing this, and it's like, oh my god, Frank Cora at least is excited about the product, and you can tell he's got the energy just being. His youth and growing up in Atlanta, and like he really actually does want to see the Braves win. But like, man, our broadcast team is not good. It's not good at all.
No, it's a terrible broadcast. I agree. It's really crazy. The only good NL East broadcast is Gary, Keith, and Ron on SNY.
Mm.
Every other team in the NL East has a bad broadcast.
The Braves radio network is great. Like Ben Ingram is like. Just
I have never heard the Braves radio network. It's funny when I've been at these games, and have you been to a major league game this year?
Major league, no.
Okay. But you know how it is when you're in a game and you're in the concourse and you're in the bathroom and they have the radio broadcast piped in.
Yes.
And it's so crazy to me to think about people listening to like baseball on the radio still.
Oh, there are so many, John. You have no idea.
I know, but it's like, and I'm glad because like that's how I first started paying attention to and liking baseball was by hearing it on the radio. And I'm just glad for just like nostalgic reasons that continues. But it's just crazy to me that that's a thing that like there's still baseball on the radio.
There's a lot. I mean, most of my family listens to it on the radio. Like it's just easy, especially when you're doing stuff. It's just what they grew up doing. Kind of like you said, it's a nostalgia thing.
Yeah. But then like, okay, but Braves wise, like, mm-hmm. cause you mentioned it, Freeman is a free agent after this season.
Correct.
One, do you think the Braves will re-sign him?
Yes.
Two, do you think that they will make a deal with that being the reality? That they have to commit at minimum $20 million a year to Freddie Freeman for like 5 or 6 seasons.
Mm. Yes.
Okay. Because I know there's
Freeman's
some money
like the
coming
one
off
thing.
The
it's
books.
Like you can't, like you're literally saving on Acuna and Albie so you can give the lifetime contract to Freeman.
I suppose. And like they have money. Also, when did the Braves get Tanner Roark?
Is Tanner Roark a Brave right now?
So says.
What? Did I
black
out?
Wait, no, wait, that doesn't make any sense. Did the Blue Jays get rid of him? He was a Blue Jay.
My mind. When did Tanner
okay, the Blue Jays released him on May 3rd and he signed with the Braves on May 11th, but I think he's in the minors right now.
I don't think I've seen like unless I'm really losing it. I was like I don't think I've seen him.
Yeah, he's in AAA right now. He's got a 3.16 ERA. In 13 games, including one start. So he's a reliever for whatever reason.
Mm.
Wow. You know Tanner Roark has fallen when this Braves rotation that has like 3 functional pitchers in it right now won't even look at him to make a start.
Mm. Good career, though, for like a 25th round pick, though.
Well, I see the Phillies have done something insanely stupid.
What happened?
According to Twitter.
Oh, no.
I haven't actually seen what happened, but I just glanced at my Twitter timeline and I've just seen just a lot of people saying lol Brad Miller.
Mm.
So
how many games back are they? They're still in second. I want to think of like they're not far back at the moment.
No, and that's the NL East is just it sucks. It sucks so much. Not one of those teams deserves to be in the playoffs, man. Okay, maybe the Mets. But holy hell.
Bats predicting the Mets.
The Phillies are
Earth.
Just... Man.
Mm.
The Phillies are
in the bottom of the ninth right now, so I guess he just blew a lead.
Yes. Because this is my thing with the Phillies. And like I understand, like, yes, I enjoy their chaos on a fundamental level. Mm-hmm. But the way the Phillies suck is just so kind of soul crushing. Mm-hmm. It becomes hard to find it funny, and it just becomes more like.
But they're a game over 500. Like they're okay. Like if they,
how did they do that?
I know. You keep doubting me, but I'm like, I don't think the Phillies are going anywhere. Like I think they're just dumb in the bullpen, but like, I don't know. There's still a lot of top end talent there, and they could still do some stuff.
Yeah, but like, there's like a spiritual rot at the heart of the franchise, where there just seems to be this like, I don't understand how a team that just can't play, like they can't play baseball. They don't play baseball right. The Phillies don't play baseball right. And I don't mean that in the like play the game the right way, like old school shit. They literally just don't play the game correctly. They make mistakes that are like mind that are, you're just like, how does a team full of people who have been playing this sport for so long do these kinds of things? It doesn't make sense. It just seems like everyone there is stupid. Like, it just seems like a stupid team. Like, no one there can keep it together enough. It's just Three Stooges constantly. I can't imagine being a Phillies fan. I can't imagine subjecting myself to that every day. What a miserable existence.
You really, really driving the nail in there.
I mean, there are a lot of franchises where I just imagine being a fan of this team must just be like getting kicked in the throat every day. But man, the Phillies take it to Falcons another fandom. Level.
Welcome to being a Tennessee fan, Tennessee Volunteer fan.
Tennessee, the Phillies of the SEC, or is that Arkansas?
No, the Phillies of the SEC would probably be Texas A&M.
Does that make Johnny Manziel Bryce Harper?
Or maybe even Auburn. I could see that though. Manziel, Harper, yeah, where it's like they're good. They win what they're supposed to win. They have the opportunity. They have the money. They have the resources. They have the talent base. They have the top end talent to be elite, but for whatever reason they just can't seem to break through and they just do dumb stuff to not break through. John, this naturally leads us to the Padres, who the Braves are currently in a series with.
Yes.
Who could Preller add? Because they are exploring going over the luxury tax at the deadline. Watch Darvish last night. He's struggled in recent weeks. After getting up to his hot start, I think he's 2-2, and he has like a 4-point-something ERA in the last month.
Yeah, I mean that's I chalked a lot of that up to the sticky stuff adjustment because especially
well,
for a guy like Darvish
last night, and he threw a flamethrower.
And sure, a guy like Darvish needs his command to be 1,000% on point, and I would not be surprised if he had been using stuff to get to that point. So that obviously complicates things.
They also have been hurt. Like, they have a lot of starters down, but, like, their offense is...
They have a lot of injured players, yes.
But their bullpen... Bullpen's nice, man. Bullpen.
Bullpen's good. Bullpen has been good, despite the fact, like you said, they've lost a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, all that pitching depth they built up over the offseason, most of it is gone at this point.
But this is...
Obviously, Clevinger...
Lot, right? Like, this is why.
Yeah.
Injuries happen.
Obviously, Clevinger blew out before the season, but Lamet was a guy that they were counting on to come back, and he just, you know, was up and down and then seems to be now, I can't imagine he's coming back at this point. Morihona, I know, is a guy who they, you know, was a swingman for them last year and the year before, blowing out as well. Ryan Weathers and that awful freak injury as a guy. And that guy, he was maybe seventh or eighth on the depth chart and they were already up to him. And obviously this is where Snell being bad is particularly damaging and where Chris Paddock continuing his insanely frustrating existence is damaging. So I wouldn't be surprised if San Diego tries to add an arm because I don't know otherwise where that's coming from. I would imagine that they probably feel like if we go into the postseason with Darvish, Musgrove, Snell as our top three, we're in pretty good shape. But
Gibson makes sense for them.
Who would?
Gibson would make sense for them, I think.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think that they would probably aim for more of a guy who can eat innings right now and just give them consistent six-inning starts. So they don't have to do bullpen games. They don't have to rely on younger guys because the other part of it now is like when you look at who they have still in their system pitching wise, really available. Like they for whatever reason, and you know, prospect folks much smarter than me would be able to tell you what's going on there. I don't know anything, but for whatever reason, the Mackenzie Gore button has not been pushed and continues not to be pushed. You know, and beyond that, most of their top pitching prospects are a little lower down in the organization. Guys like Anderson Espinosa or Robert Hassel Justin Lang. So there's not a whole lot of internal help there. So I have to imagine maybe San Diego is thinking, okay, let's target a guy along the lines of Gibson, especially because I think a team like Texas, for someone like Gibson, would be more willing to take kind of a grab bag of like teams prospects, if you know what I mean. Guys who in a team prospect list maybe would be more in that 15 to 25 range as opposed to top 10. You know, or maybe it's one top 12 guy and a couple of lottery tickets. But either way, yeah, I can see San Diego going that direction, because otherwise, unless they feel like displacing Eric Hosmer, and it seems like that's never going to happen for I know he's been better of late, but for whatever reason, the Padres will just never give up on him. Yeah, I don't really see anything offensively either, because they've still got good depth, and as long as everyone stays healthy, that lineup is very, very good.
Yeah, I think the Padres are fine. But oh, that was the other thing I jotted down. Like I just jotted down some just great insight from the Braves broadcast team. But God, I am never getting. This broadcast, I'm getting blackballed there. But Glavin was like, yeah, the unfortunate thing for the Padres is because this division's so good, like they're gonna get probably squeezed out with these injuries. Like they're looking at getting squeezed out of the playoff picture. And I'm like, what is he talking about? Like they're getting three, and if anything, like what are you talking about? The Padres are fine. Like he was just like they're
gonna.
We're not getting two from the NL East and two from the Central. It's not happening.
No, and like that's the thing. Like if there's any group of teams that should be worried about getting squeezed out, it's all the non-Mets, non-Brewers teams in the East and Central. Their playoff chances are effectively zero because there are three NL West teams that are in all likelihood going to make it. But I do think Glavin is right, or at least on the right path. Or however you want to call it.
It was just like a really doom and gloom. Like the Padres are in real trouble just because I'm like, no, the Padres.
I mean, I will say that they are. I mean, they are five games back right now. Their division odds are about 13%. Like their playoff odds are still very high, but the problem is that's the playoff odds to go to the one game wild card against. Well, maybe Kevin Gausman isn't the most frightening thing, but still against a very good pitcher in Kevin Gausman and a really good Giants team, a legitimately, genuinely good Giants team. Or, hey, here's Walker Buehler and the Dodgers. Mm. Or, hey, here's, well, no, it'd be one of those two probably. But, you know, that's the thing. Like, if this were happening in a pre-sticky stuff world where you have Yu Darvish at the height of his powers, like, you're the Padres, you feel good about that, you know, especially if there's a chance that you might be hosting that game, too.
I mean, you're feeling good anyway. You have Cronenworth. Machado. Like they are deep.
You're feeling good about making at least the wild card game. Their odds of making the playoffs are 93.6%, and I honestly think it's probably higher than that.
But that's like, what my broader point was here. He was like, "They're playoff." I'm like, "No, the Padres are making the playoffs. What are we talking about? What are you talking about?"
I think this is probably just Glavin just not able to express it properly, but I think his concern is like to have a team this good and then have to go at it in essentially a coin flip game, and then on top of that your reward is congrats, now you have to face a team with the best record in baseball, which will probably be the Dodgers, which
awesome.
Number one,
the ratings,
no,
that,
it's gonna be it's gonna be fucking great. My sadness is gonna be that that's not the NLCS.
No, I don't want that. See, like part of me is just like, I want a bloodbath early. Like, let's get a bloodbath early. Like they have to do, like, just the stakes. Like, we're not gonna be able to move off our couches, John.
No, all of those games are gonna be must watch. It's gonna be fantastic.
And if we get in the what we're looking at in the AL, dude, we might be getting Blue Jays Yankees. Or Rays, Yankees. Like, that's a possibility.
Or, Dave, don't forget the A's. They're still kicking around.
I'm trying to forget the A's.
I know we're all trying to forget. None of us want to forget. I'm actively trying
because I'm reading the reports on like what's happening with the vote in Oakland and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, I'm trying to forget the A's. I mean, it is
worth noting they have better playoff odds than the Yankees and the Blue Jays right now, for what that's worth. But
do you think that's just the schedule? Yeah. Oh, have you seen the Braves schedule? And like what we,
I assume,
like we've gotten Rays and Padres out the gate. Like this, this stretch is not.
Oh yeah, Red Sox got Yankees, Blue Jays up back to back. That's a fun way to start the second half. But
yeah, Stacey was pretty.
Yeah, I don't think San Diego. Like I don't. Yeah, you're right. San Diego's not doomed. It's just they are in a position where they lost a lot of. Especially not just lost a lot of time, but just the fact that, like, it apparently does not matter how many holes the Dodgers sprink, they're still unsinkable. It's just that back-to-back misfortune of not just the Dodgers being the Dodgers, but also the Giants coming out of where they came. Because I think the hope in San Diego was probably not just we're going to make the playoffs, but we are comfortably going to make the playoffs and be within... And they, I mean, they are. They're only.
They should have looked at it this way, because part of the reality, and Preller's a smart dude. Like, I think he probably told ownership, like, we're doing this, but like, the Dodgers are still in our division. Like, there's still a very good chance we're going to have to win a one game playoff. Like, there's a very real chance. That's part of the.
No, and I'm sure that was the message he conveyed to ownership. That was like, no matter what this is, like the team that you know we're in the same division as the team that just won the World Series, and is you know the like. Is arguably the best team, like one of the best teams ever assembled. Like, you know, I'm sure that was made clear that it's like, there's, you know, we are not necessarily going to go into this as like wire to wire division favorites or leaders. But I just imagine it has to be that feeling of, you know, not just crap, like this division is going to be even harder to take than we thought, but crap, like we might be heading into a wild card game with three starters who we have no clue what we're going to get out of them on a given night at this point. Because, you know, and that's a real thing. Like, that's a, like, I think, you know, if you ask, like, I don't know what the, obviously how the rest of the season is going to go, but I imagine if the Padres right now had to pick one of those three, they'd go with Darvish and they would sleep soundly with that. But yeah, that's just got to be a scary feeling for them.
But like, they don't have to use Darvish for seven innings. Like, their bullpen's so good that like,
no, of course they help. That's a good point. Especially when we get to the playoffs. Yeah. There's always going to be, you know, they're going to be able to use relievers more aggressively and for longer periods.
Yep.
But yeah, I do have to imagine that, like, no, there's probably not any fear in the Padres organization that they're going to miss the playoffs, barring some complete and utter collapse on their part.
Also, if they don't beat the Giants in the play-in game, that's on them. Like, that's true. It's like, no, you should beat the Giants. If you are who you say you are, you should beat them in a one-game playoff.
I think it's just the idea that the expectation went from we're easily going to make the playoffs and we're going to challenge... Like we're going to be like true blue division. Well, I guess that's the thing. They are still true blue division contenders. It's just they have an obstacle now in their way in the form of, oh crap, the Giants are actually good.
But it's also like they're in the NL Central, NL East, whoever. Like you're looking at them completely different. Like they're just coasting in.
And I guess that's the other half of it is you can easily see it as, oh crap, the Giants are good, and it's just the unfortunate reality they happen to be in our division. But at the same time, the Braves are below 500, the Nationals are below 500, the Cubs are below 500, the Cardinals are below 500. You know, like, there are teams that should have been better that are just simply haven't been. So I guess, in that sense, the Padres have been lucky that there's really the only competition they have for another wild card spot is the Giants. That's basically it. It's just going to be probably those, you know, two of the three teams in the NL West are going to be wild card teams. It's just going to be how it shakes out. And this will be a conversation, you know, down the road if this is what holds up. But it'll be fun to debate which of those three matchups is the most fun.
Yeah, I think so. John Taylor, Tigers losing Turnbull. How sad are you? Because the Tigers are sneaky, not bad.
Like, they're not terrible.
They're not terrible.
They're not awful. Like, I mean, granted, they're absolutely not going to make the playoffs because, well, the Tigers. But, you know, they've been on fire out of the gate. They've been scoring a bunch of runs. Like, I saw them. They're one of the teams I saw during my road trip. They played the White Sox. There's some stuff to like here. And I know we've spent a lot of time being like, oh, you know, when are they going to figure out the stuff that actually matters and who matters and all that fun stuff. But Jaime Candelario has been very useful. Robbie Grossman was a really nice pickup. Akil Baddoo, not just a wonderful story, but has actually hit well in limited time. A lot of that pitching looks like it is finally beginning to shake out. Certainly Casey Mize and Tarik Skubal have been they haven't been great. Mize has been very good at times, and Skubal's had some very good starts. They've been inconsistent, but at the same time, they're both 24, and this is what you want to see out of the Tigers. They're not perfect, but they're producing anyway. I mean, it sucks to lose Turnbull if only because that pretty much wipes him out for 2022 as well, and he was, you know, not just a useful arm for depth purposes, but it was also a good starter in his own right, especially with the way that Matthew Boyd has kind of unraveled and is also no longer, is, I believe, a free agent after this season. Gonna check real quick. Let's look at money. No, he's going to be a free agent after next season. But someone who I imagine, you know, I don't know that the Tigers necessarily feel that great about him, and he's already 30. But at the very least, they've got that much going, is that pitching has developed nicely. And they've, you know, I mean, I don't know how real, for example, guys like Eric Haas are. I've never actually figured out how to pronounce Haas. I believe it's Haas, now that I think about it. But I'm not sure. But either way, you know, Badu has obviously been a great find. Candelario it seems like a piece they can build around. Haas has been a great find. Isaac Paredes is produced in short bursts. Daz Cameron looked good before he went on the injured list. I mean, yeah, the best pieces of this team are still down on the farm, with the exception of Mize and Skubal. And Matt Manning looked awful in his brief time up. But, you know, the pitching development is hard, so it's going to take some time. But I don't know. I guess my thing, though, is like with the Tigers has always been, when are you going to start building on this? And I think this is the first offseason where I think it's a question genuinely worth asking, because as we've seen, the Central is not by any means a division with a juggernaut on top. The White Sox are a good team, and this is not me saying the White Sox are a bad team or they're a fluke or whatever. They're legitimately a good team. But
I don't know about that. I think they're legitimately average right now.
Well, and certainly they've been able to take advantage, and I think this is something, I feel like we've noted this before, but that they are like some absurd record against.
Yes, they have
other AL Central
teams.
14-26
against teams with a winning record or something like that.
Yeah, or here, I'm going to look it up just because I've made myself curious. Against teams that are... Oh, wait, where is that on Baseball Reference? No, where did that go? I thought it was here. Oh, really? I thought Baseball Reference had a record against above and below 500 in schedule and results for a team page. That's annoying. Well, anyway, they've cleaned up against, you know, they're 15-7 combined against the Tigers and Royals. They're 12-3 alone against the Twins, who really have just... Boy, the Twins are just their own universe of bad.
But I appreciate the Twins imploding like this because it makes baseball fun in the sense that, like, they have so many intriguing pieces to move. Like, they make the trade deadline spicy.
The weird one to me is the talk about Nelson Cruz moving, and it's just very strange to think about that.
Well, he's also only got multiple options. Moving DH guys are just already...
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing. It's just weird to think that a trade there might happen because, that's a whole different conversation, but... regardless, like I mean, I think the White Sox are a legitimately good team, but you also don't get the feeling, Cleveland does not feel like a team that's moving in any particular direction positively. The Twins are a complete mess right now organizationally. It just feels like that I don't understand how this happened with this team. And the Royals, boy, I mean, again, a team where the best pieces are still yet to come, but it just feels like there is an opportunity there if you're the Tigers, maybe not necessarily to grab the Central, but to make some noise, at least as a wild card team next year, if you can add some piece. It doesn't even need to be like, I'm not saying Tigers get crazy and sign, you know, Corey Seager and Trevor Story. And I mean, that also wouldn't make any sense, but I think there's room there for them to start making those moves toward actually building again, that we finally started seeing enough from this roster in bits and pieces, admittedly, and it's fits and starts, but that we're finally seeing results from enough of this team that I think you can start adding guys who are more than just stopgaps. Because I think if you look at the Tigers' off seasons of the last few years, every signing they've made has just been a guy who is clearly not there to do anything else but just be not even good, just okay. Not even okay sometimes. Just be. He's just been signed to be there. And I, at the very least, I think it's time for Detroit to take that next step in. Let's start signing guys who can start moving us forward. because
they are. They're close, man. I think they're closer than people might expect. Like, I think the Tigers are actually going to come because I think the Royals are hitting some real roadblocks. Like, the Royals might trade Whit Merrifield. Like, the value's never going to be higher with them. I don't know why you wouldn't, and Duffy's gone, and I think they're farther back, and the Indians are always straddling that line of what do we really want to do, and I don't know. I think the Tigers are right there. Like, I think the Tigers could absolutely start.
I don't think that the 2022 Tigers, regardless of how they finish the season, unless they have a bunch of guys come up and just absolutely rake, and it's like, okay, now we have to start reevaluating some stuff. But I think the 2022 Tigers, I'm not going to look at them as a playoff team unless they do some crazy stuff in the offseason. But I do think that they are now at the point where it's like, okay, we need to start competing again and competing regularly, and that means adding guys in free agency who are actual contributors and not just dudes who are going to be there, not just replacement level guys, not just cheap veterans, not just dudes who are on their sixth organization and only have like one functional tool out of five or whatever. Guys who can actually push things forward. Because at this point, if you're the Tigers, there's like, what are you going to do? Tank again? Your farm system's already good. You're already starting to see the results. And you also got the what pick did they have in this year's draft? The third pick, I believe, second, something like that.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah. Obviously they didn't have the first pick. That was the Pirates, who continue to be just such a depressing I feel so bad for Pirates fans.
Did you read that story and like their how much they overpaid for that third round pick? I want to say he was like a top 25 Keith Law guy, but he fell because teams weren't going to pay for him. What's his name? The dude, he's actually from Georgia somewhere.
I'm not sure. Oh, and the Tigers had the third pick and took Jackson Jobe, despite Marcelo Mayer being there, because they had already a deal in place and a promise in place to Jobe to take him third. But then they lucked into the pitcher from Texas, I believe, Ty Madden, who fell to them in the second or in the CBA round or in the CBA, the collective balance round, because he had signability questions. So, I mean, they've already, like, thank you. That was well done. Like, assuming this team doesn't bottom out like it has in the last couple of years, and that's always a possibility, because this is a team that does not really have a lot of depth. And if enough guys get hurt, or if they do sell off some pieces at the deadline, they're going to end up being a 90 plus loss team again. And I think that's more likely than not, you're still going to see like 90 losses anyway. But at the same time, like, that's not going to get you a top five pick this year. I believe I wish our playoff odds had the first draft odds. But I mean, just by standings, the Tigers there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, at least six teams with worse records right now, with the possibility of Colorado joining or getting worse, as well as the Twins also have a worse record. The Twins obviously can get significantly worse than this. So I think this is all a way of saying, like, I think the prospect hoarding phase for the Tigers is over, at least the prospect gathering phase. Now is the time, I think, when you start adding the dudes who are going to be the structure around those prospects over the next 2 years, if you can. And I haven't looked fully at the free agent list. I don't expect them to be players in any sense or any major free agents, but I do think they should be thinking about signing some second tier guys to start moving things forward toward being at the very least a wild card contender, if not someone who can sneak into a central title if everything breaks right.
Yeah, man, AL Central, just weird. And
to borrow your joke, I don't care for the AL Central.
Do you like the Giants for Starlin Marte? Like, they're exploring that option. Do you like it more than the Yankees? Because it seems like the Yankees is probably my bet on where he ends up. But do you like him there? Do you think he fits in that outfield?
I think he fits into pretty much any. I mean, I think it would fit into pretty much any outfield.
The question. Two all-star Cincinnati, sir.
That's true. But, well, now Ryan Castellanos has a small fracture in...
Ryan Castellanos? Nick Castellanos?
Or Ryan... Sorry. Oh, my God. Nick Castellanos. Ryan Castellanos. Where'd that come from? Yeah, I mean, I think he would... I mean, I guess that's... Like, do you... The Giants, what they have right now with Yastrzemski and Dickerson and Duggar and... Yes, I think they need some depth at the very least, the Giants do. And I think adding Marte obviously wouldn't be a bad idea in that, you know, that is useful depth because that means you are protected from an injury-prone guy like Duggar getting hurt again. And Dickerson's had injury issues. Yastrzemski has had injury issues, particularly this season. You know, that frees up, and Austin Slater has also had injury issues. You know, one that, you know, that lets you get Mike Tauchman off this team entirely, which I think is useful for a variety of purposes. It just gives you a speed element at the top of the lineup, obviously, that's helpful. It gives you another good defensive outfielder who can be played in pretty much, I think, any position. I don't know if you want to play Marte in center regularly, but he can certainly handle either corner just fine. So yeah, he would make sense for the Giants. I just think he would make sense for a whole lot of other teams. He's going to come relatively cheap. He can, like I said, all the positive things he has are like the only negatives really, I think you find with Marte would be he's been injury prone in the past. And there's, I think, a genuine question of the newfound plate patience is that, I mean, I wouldn't want to say it's a fluke. It's almost August. Like it's a little late for that to be a fluke, but you know, is that something that you feel comfortable in him being able to continue, I guess?
Yeah. I don't know. I think he's just a good depth piece no matter where he ends up, I don't think.
No, I think he's a legitimate starter in certain places. I certainly think if the Yankees trade for him, for example, he's their full-time center fielder. Now, should he be the Yankees' full-time center fielder? That's a whole other ass question. But no, I can see teams where that would be the case. Like, for example, if you look at him as an actual center fielder, among contenders, at the very least, I think, Toronto doesn't really count, but definitely the Yankees, the Brewers, absolutely. I mean, he would make a lot of sense for the Atlanta Braves, just saying.
He would. I don't know if they'll trade in division, though.
I don't think the Nationals, I don't think the Marlins care about that as much, though. Because Marte's not a guy that's going to, I think the issue probably maybe, or you're saying Atlanta wouldn't trade within division.
No, I don't think Miami would. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know if they would.
I don't know. I don't really think they would care because Marte is only going to be there 2 more months and then he's gone.
True.
I think if anything, it'd be Atlanta being worried about trading folks to Miami who are 2 years from now going to be part of the reason Miami's winning the NL East year after year or whatever it is. But three teams right there, New York, Milwaukee, and Atlanta, I think could definitely use him. I think the Mets could certainly use some outfield depth and help as well. I think if Cleveland has any intention at all in the wild card, he would make a ton of sense there. He would make a lot of sense for the Phillies, who just don't have a functional center fielder, despite the fact that they've tried like 19 different players at that position. I'm assuming the Cardinals will continue going on with Harrison Bader, but the Astros certainly could do better than Miles Straw. And I think I think replacing Straw with someone else, maybe it's not Marte. I mean, the Giants have gotten good results out of that position from Duggar and Slater. It's just, you know, it's just a question is if you're the Giants, what do you want to do with the pieces you have? Like, what do you want to focus on? Is it the outfield? I mean, I think if there's a position that you've definitely struggled at, it's, you know, second base doesn't really seem to have. I know Donovan Solano's been good, but is that something that you can really trust? Like, is, you know, I don't know off the top of my head if Tommy La Stella's back anytime soon, but yeah, left field has been a problem for them. So maybe you just take Marte and stick him in left, you know, but there are, I mean, other teams, you know, other contenders have problems in left. Hey, look, it's the New York Yankees again, unless you want to believe that Ryan LaMare and Greg Allen are the future, whatever's going on out there, Orrin Wright, whatever. Or the Mets obviously could use some, like I said before, the Mets could use outfield help. The Phillies could use outfield help. I think everyone could use outfield help. And I think Marte would make a sense for a lot of teams. I think if I'm running the Giants. Yeah, I think Marte's probably the guy I make some kind of push for and probably look to add some kind of reliever depth as well. But yeah, I think he makes sense for them. Yeah, I talked myself into it. Good job, mate.
Well, speaking of talking yourself into something, is there a way to get the Reds closer to Milwaukee? Can we do it? Let's put ourselves in. Who's running the Reds these days, John?
The guy whose name sounds like Nick Kroll, but isn't Nick Kroll.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. For first things first, I think
because I want so this what, to happen what are the, so bad. Like, I want the Reds to be rewarded for trying. I want the two outfielders. I don't know if this is ever going to happen again. Castellanos is probably gone for this year. I want good things. I want to see the Reds win the NL Central. That's what I decided.
I could see them keeping Castellanos if he likes it there enough. Mm. I mean, did he price himself out of their range? Maybe, but I don't know. I guess I'll be very curious to see what
they're doing all this with Eugenio Suarez being terrible. Like, he was their best trade coming in. Very... And he's awful.
And this is the thing, like, they have a functional line. Even with Suarez struggling, they still have a good lineup if Castellanos is healthy. I think, first and foremost, you want to focus on getting some rotation depth. Sonny Gray has been very up and down and has had a lot of injury issues. I think you need some extra help there. Two, I think the obvious other target is the bullpen. Heath Hembree is your closer right now, and even though that's worked, and I have no idea why, that's not really something you can count on to continue.
Has Amir Garrett been awful? I haven't got back.
Amir Garrett's been better of late, but I guess the problem is, like, you're using guys like Heath Hembree and Brad Brack and Josh Osich in high leverage situations. That's really, really not ideal. And if you're the Reds and you have any hopes of changing that, you have to be able to get someone who can help you in that regard. And I guess, like, and just off the top of my head, just trying to think, okay, who would that necessarily be? I mean, the fun one to think of is Craig Kimbrel. I just have no idea if the Cubs would actually do that.
Well, Kimbrel might be. Like, is your dream package still Kimbrel and Rizzo to Boston this season?
I think Rizzo makes a lot of sense for Boston. I think Kimbrel probably makes it cost prohibitive because he's been so damn good.
Would you like to guess?
And he's also under contract for one more year.
Would you like to guess which Red has the worst WRC plus?
Eugenio Suarez.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, he's been awful.
Like, unbelievably awful. But like,
and like that. I mean, the dream package from the if the Reds were to do it from the Cubs would be Bryant and Kimbrel.
Mm.
Which would be a hell of a. I think you want to maybe go on to get some rotation depth. I think some relief help would be good. Maybe this is where they can shake a deal out with the Pirates for Richard Rodriguez. Maybe they can pluck someone of use from. It'd be an interesting like target if the Rockies continue to be down. Like if they're willing to listen on Dan Bard and try to sell high on him. Maybe there's some veteran guys in. That's kind of the thing. Like bullpen, I don't know. Bullpen pieces seem like they're going to be kind of in short supply. That's just what it feels like to me. Because a lot of the teams who will be selling, or at least we know who will be sellers right now, don't really have bullpen pieces that you kind of feel like, oh, this is something I need, or this is something that changes a division. I think Kimbrel's the only one who really qualifies there. I mean, correct me if I'm just missing someone completely obvious and I haven't figured
Brad
out
Hand?
Yet. That's not funny.
Heath Bell.
Heath Bell's not even a thing anymore. Would
Brad Lidge?
I think Rodriguez would be the other guy in that category, but certainly he doesn't have the career record or same stuff as Kimbrel. And then I think beyond that, you're probably talking. Tyler Rogers would be the other guy.
Well, but who's been the Mariners' good closer as of late? What was his name? Because the Mariners punt.
The Mariners are 50. They're above 500.
I know, but like they're not.
They're not going to make the playoffs. But
so,
I don't
sell high. Yeah. Like they might move Haniger. They have some guys that might move. Seager might get moved.
I just can't. Like, oh boy, I know Jerry Depoto marches to the beat of his own drum entirely. Oh boy, you think he's just praying that over the next 10 days they collapse?
No, because I actually do think he wants to win. I don't think it's bad faith.
No, but I just don't think the Mariners are going to do anything. I think they're going to make a lot of Depoto moves that are just kind of roster swapping, but like I don't think he does it.
I don't even know.
No, I don't think they move any. I don't think they move anyone like major. I think they just get some like low end bullpen guys or something.
Wait, are we calling Haniger a major move in 2021?
I don't know. Maybe not major, but like I think he would be notable.
Mm. Okay.
But
can we get Jeff Francis or Bronson Arroyo back in Cincinnati?
No, no.
Who's
can't.
Your favorite? Worst?
And I guess
like, who's your favorite bad innings eater 4.57 FIP Reds pitcher of our lifetime, John? Who do you think of? Homer Bailey?
Yeah, but Homer Bailey was good for them briefly.
I feel like he was worse more than he was good, but I could be wrong, misremembering that.
I just think of guys. No, I just think of guys like Elmer Descends.
Oh my, that's a name.
Yeah, that's a guy that just got remembered there. But yeah, I think the Reds are going to have trouble finding like that relief ace, like unless they're willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. So I think the other thing they could focus on is shortstop. But I don't know. There's not. I mean, yeah, you can make a bid for Trevor Story. I just don't know that the Reds are willing to.
Oh, that's a great way, Davis.
Okay, that is he even still playing?
Yeah, is he not still the closer in Colorado? Just, like, am I crazy?
Either way, like I think if you're the Reds, like you
Kansas
probably
City
have
is
to
where
focus
he's at right
on.
Now. That's why we forget about Wade Davis.
Wow, that's depressing. Yeah, I think those are probably the three. Like, if you want to make help the Reds catch the Brewers, you got to get an actual functional shortstop. You need to get at least one good, reliable reliever, and you should get some extra rotation depth. I think those are the three things they'd have to do at the deadline for me to feel like they're real contenders for the Central. Otherwise, I think Milwaukee probably just rides it out down the stretch.
They're just boring. Like, I don't like Milwaukee. Like, Milwaukee's got some good young pitching, but I don't trust that offense, and I don't think they're going to do anything in the playoffs. I would rather the Reds are a better story for me. Last thing, and we'll wrap up here tonight, John. Your favorite baseball thing from the last week since we last recorded. It could be from your park expedition, something you saw, you read. Your favorite.
I've just enjoyed, I think, just as I've seen all these parks and just like, it's just been really nice to see people back at baseball games because there's just like, okay, I'll be honest. I've only been to a couple of NBA games. I've never been to an NFL game in person. I've never been to an NHL game. So I've not experienced the great breadth and depth of sports in person, but there's just something about just the way you can just be at a baseball game. Like there's something just happening constantly in the background that you can focus in on whenever you want it, or you can just tune out whenever you feel like it. I don't know. There's something I missed about that. And there's also just something I missed about seeing other people doing that. So it's seeing people just hanging out together, what's basically an open air bar that also has sports happening at the same time. So yeah, I don't really have a specific moment, but I do think over the course of this trip, I really did enjoy being able to do that over and over again, even though I had to watch a lot of like NL Central baseball and also that absurd Mets Reds game on Monday.
How is Great American Ballpark? Is it good?
It's all right. It's fine.
How? What are your rankings? It's fine. That's what we'll end.
Of the five.
Where have you been? Yeah.
Of the five parks I've seen this trip that I had not been to before, because I'd already been to Wrigley. Mm-hmm. PNC is number one. I loved PNC. Beautiful park. Wonderful experience.
Great team.
Just can't. Okay, they're working on it, I think. Can't recommend that enough. If you're a fan of a visiting team going through Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh is a place you can get to without too much hassle, or if you have the time, go do it. Pittsburgh's also a pretty cool city with a lot of good food. I really like Comerica. I think Comerica's number two. Just well designed, good concessions, just spacious, pretty, well laid out, just a really well executed ballpark. Mm-hmm. This was a surprise to me. I like Busch Stadium a lot, and that's my number three.
Best fans in the world.
Best fans in baseball. Mm-hmm. The view of St. Louis, including the arch you get from the stadium, is ridiculous. It's crazy how pretty it is, and I appreciate that there really does not seem to be I wandered a lot over that park, and certainly I don't know if you Cardinals fans listeners might point out, but like I, as far as I could tell, I could not find a bad view in that park, at least of the game on the field, which you definitely can't say of places like Comerica. If you go all the way to the tippy top, you can't see anything. And I felt the same way. Great American. Those seats go very high. Miller Park, I think, was fourth for me. Nothing particularly against Miller Park. It just kind of Miller Park, I think, is better for the atmosphere at the game, which is to say, it's the drunkest I've ever seen a baseball crowd. Than I think it is for the stadium itself, which is mostly fine. I got the benefit of having the roof open, which is a much better view than roof closed, but. And I do appreciate the one thing that Milwaukee does, which is that they put bathrooms every like 30 feet, which they understand that everyone there has been drinking heavily all day. Mm. But just nothing, not a particularly memorable park, just a good experience though. And I think I have Great American Ballpark fifth, just because there's, something had to be FIP, and that's no slight on Great American, which is a perfectly fine park. I just don't find it to be a place. I don't really see it as a place where I think I would go again unless I had a good reason to, if that makes any sense. It's the, I think the most disappointing thing for me was the food. There's little food variety. None of it looks particularly appealing, which I was surprised by because Cincinnati has great food. And I just didn't really seem like they had a lot of good food options at the ballpark. But I will give the Reds points for how, and for however long they do this. I can't imagine it'll be much longer. They still allow you to bring coolers or like soft coolers and bags into games so that you can still bring in food with you. Which,
that's wild.
Yeah, every other park was no bags at all except for except for emergency kits and diaper bags and that stuff. But the Reds were, no, you just couldn't bring in backpacks. Everything else was fine. Like, it's like the way teams have been doing it forever. I'm curious why, I would be curious why Cincinnati hasn't changed it. But either way, kudos to the Reds for doing that and for however long they continue to do that, because that bag ban is just so obviously and just miserably anti-fan that it just makes me angry to think about it.
Interesting. Have you been to Truist yet?
Have I been to which one?
Truist.
In Atlanta. The Braves Park? No. Mm.
Okay. Well, no, when you make the way down, let's plant. That's what we should do, John. When you make the way down to Atlanta.
Is that the phrase? When I make the way down?
Is that a Southern thing?
I know. You're the one who said it. I assumed it was.
Maybe it is. I had not been called out on it before. I'm not sure. Now I'm going to ask some friends and some family if that's a Southern phrase. I'm not sure. Maybe. Make the way down yonder? I don't know. I guess. Kind of? Maybe? You have me guessing. I don't know. I'm not sure, John. I was not expecting to get to ask about this. I don't know. You've been podcasting with me for several years now, John. Do I sound... Mm-hmm. Have I ever, like, did you know early on that I was from the South, if I had not told you?
No, there are no vocal giveaways at the very least.
Mm. Interesting.
Like, I don't hear you talking about how much you love boiled peanuts.
Boiled peanuts are awesome. Have you had a good boiled peanut?
I've never had boiled peanuts at all.
John, I thought you were just making, okay, so Turner Field, and we'll wrap up here. There was a guy who, like, multiple guys, actually, who sold boiled peanuts like around the stadium parking lot all the time. Like, they're delicious. Like, that's what I grew up eating, like, at these games.
I mean, if I were to go to a place where they were, I would certainly try them. I just don't think I've ever even had the opportunity to eat them.
I would guess that you would like them. They're good. But yeah, that's wild. Like, there's just so many of those in Turner. Rest in peace. But yeah, that was a thing. John Taylor, what can we check out at fangraph.com this week?
Two weekly series, or two series we got going on right now, both annual series. First is our trade value series, where we rank players from 50th to first in terms of how much overall trade value they have. That's a Ben Clemens, Kevin Goldstein joint production. And Jay Jaffe is doing his annual replacement level killers, where he goes through each position in the league to see which contenders have the biggest holes at said positions, and then has some thoughts on how to fix it. So he's rolled through the infield so far. He's got the outfield for the rest of the week. So check those out, plus all our usual other good stuff over at the Fangraphs.
All right. John Taylor, always a pleasure. We did it. An evening podcast. I don't know. What do we go back to our old
weird
time slot? Yeah, I think we go back to our old time slot, right?
I mean, that's just easier, I think, for everybody, too.
Yeah. Well, thank you, as always, my friend. I greatly appreciate it. I will talk to you next week.
All right. Later, man.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.